You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 438 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm. I was debating whether I could go Sounders
Hesitated for a second there.
But they are headquartered
winning on PKs isn't enough.
They are headquartered. Where?
In Renton, Washington, where I'm coming to you from.
Also home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks. Not the
more excited about the Sounders at the moment.
I guess they are still technically first place in the NFC West, aren't they?
Well,
it does not feel like it.
They're not first place because they don't have the tiebreaker. 49ers have the tiebreaker. The Niners. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's true.
I think they are, in fact, third place in the NFC West. So,
because Arizona is 0-0 in that regard. I don't know.
I think they have better conference records.
To me, applying the tiebreakers when the season is not complete is actually pretty silly. That's a thing I take objection to. Like, I understand you have to show the standings that way for a reason, but like there's lots of returns still to come.
The thing is, this hurt the Mariners along the way too by not having the tiebreakers.
I'm not
against all of these teams. That means you're in that position. Like, we're viewing it where they are right now.
But the tiebreakers are 1-3 determined by the Sid. The tiebreakers aren't determined for the Seahawks. They still have a chance to beat the 49ers in San Francisco. Obviously, that's not
record
going
isn't
to
determined.
Happen.
More games are going to happen.
Yeah. That's all the more reason that you should just
should they not even list teams in order on standings? Just have a list of teams in the records alphabetical until the last day of the year? This is the stupidest argument I've ever heard.
I don't think this is. I don't think those are comparable.
I've heard many stupid arguments.
Oh, well.
Mostly from you.
Well, I don't.
Like, I want to come back to our debate where everybody loses from last week.
No,
I'm claiming victory, but it's not a happy victory.
I'm conceding the debate, but... But yeah, no one won that. So you've never been in a European airport, obviously.
Now, oh my God. Are you still jet lagged two fucking weeks later?
I am. It's not been 2 weeks.
How long has it been?
It's been 9 days.
Eight days.
So in American airports, they list the flights by departure or by location. In European airports, they list the flights by departure time. So that's I feel like one of those two is the analogy that you're looking for here. Instead of having, I guess it's the American airports here, instead of having the standings by time, they just list it alphabetically.
There you go. Okay, I just Googled how
did I land
long
that plane?
Does it take to get over jet lag?
Oh no.
If you're flying from San Francisco to Rome for a 10-day trip, for example, it may take 6 to 9 days to fully recover. So you're in the far end of the window of recovery. Also, you just like go to Europe one fucking time and now you invoke it every single conversation.
I did not invoke it when we spoke
you,
offline.
You come back and
earlier
you're like,
this
oh,
evening.
How do you make Fugusa? Just like, motherfucker, we've been doing this for years. Congrats on going to Italy time.
I believe technically you did it for a year. It was 2020. And then it was done.
I think it was more 2021.
Was it? I'm looking forward to making it. Maybe tomorrow.
Are you? Are you going to make it by hand or are you going to get pre-made?
Actually, I think... No, I'm making it by hand. I bought yeast. I'm not going to let that yeast go to waste.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Maybe on Halloween.
Did you get some Fleischmann's?
I did not get Fleischmann's. I don't think that was available at QFC.
That's good yeast.
Well, this is not our search for Seattle's best yeast, which we would probably abandon anyway. No, we are not abandoning the cookie search.
Pretty sure that Fleischmann's is national.
I understand that. I just thought it was a funny thing.
You don't think this is local yeast? Let me clarify that for you.
Search for Seattle's best Pagasa. Let's get to the toasts. Let's get into it. Because we do have some happy news that doesn't involve Seattle football teams. First off, congratulations to Seattle's own Paolo Banchero, a man who's probably eaten some Fugazza in his day, who became the fifth Seattle area product to ever to score at least 50 points. I'm sorry, the sixth. I forgot to update it. Sixth to ever score at least 50 points in an NBA game on Monday against Indiana. Jamal Crawford did it four times, Zach LaVine twice, Malachi Flynn, Kevin Porter Jr., Brandon Roy, and Isaiah Thomas once each.
This
That's
is in the
who's.
NBA.
Yes.
Malachi Flynn scored 50 points
So
in the
this I knew
NBA.
about. It happened last year when he was playing for the Detroit Pistons. It may have represented more than half of his total points for the Detroit Pistons, who were his third team, I believe, of the season. He started in Toronto, was traded to New York in the OG Anunoby trade, and then went to Detroit in the Quentin Grimes trade or the Bojan Bogdanovic trade, depending on your perspective. He averaged 8 points a game for Detroit, scored less than 200 total points, but among them was a 50-point game. Malachi Flynn did not make an NBA roster this season.
That's kind of incredible.
But the Kevin Porter Jr. 50-point game, which happened in April of his second season with the Houston Rockets, I had zero memory of. That was a complete today I learned.
Additionally, he became the player with the lowest career scoring average with 5.2 to score 50 points in an NBA game, a record previously set by Terrence Ross.
Right, who's not on this list technically is not a Seattle native. He's a Portland native, but spiritually included as well. I
I'm
also was
guessing
surprised
that.
because Dan Feldman wrote in the Daily Dunks on Tuesday that Paolo Banchero was the first Magic player to score 50 points in a game since Tracy McGrady, and I was like, but what about Terrence Ross? But it turned out he did it while a member of the Toronto Raptors
Yeah, I was gonna
before
say
being traded to
Toronto.
Orlando. I did
Yeah.
not remember that at all. I know where I was when Terrence Ross scored 50 points, but I did not remember which team.
I mean, Dwight Howard would have been the only one that really comes to mind. Like, how many like star scorers has Orlando had in that time period?
That is a very fair point. I just thought again that Terrence Ross did it for them.
Are we gonna do a weekend NBA conversation? Should we do that right now, or should we save that?
I suppose so. Let's not spend too much time on it, though.
You didn't answer the question.
Let's do it now.
Okay. How's the NBA going?
Well, there's a lot of free throws. It's not
Oh,
great.
God.
You're way up at the start of the season. It feels like it's hard to get a handle on many teams besides like Boston and OKC are pretty clearly the two best teams in the two conferences. Our concerns about a lot of the contenders, I think, have proven true thus far. New York 1-2, Milwaukee 1-3, Philly playing without Joel Embiid and Paul George 1-2 against the weakest schedule in the league. When I ran that the other day, Denver 2-2 with both wins coming in overtime back to back against Toronto and Brooklyn. So Minnesota's 2-2. They've had some better
Who's
moments.
playing well then, as in the middle tier, I suppose.
So the Cleveland Cavaliers, I mean, I don't know if they're middle tier. I think I put them third in the power rankings vote that we did for this week.
After Oklahoma City and Boston, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Cleveland is really good. They haven't played anybody yet. Well, they did play New York, but won their first three games in blowouts and then beat the Knicks in the Garden. And then Phoenix and the Lakers in the West. The Phoenix Suns handed the Lakers their only loss thus far on Monday night. And Dallas, too. I think you can throw Dallas in there as well.
Dallas is playing well. I saw the very
Golden
end of that Lakers
State,
game.
pretty good. Won tonight without Steph Curry. And the Clippers have been surprisingly good.
I'm clicking on the NBA standings right now. Now they are ordered by their ranking in the playoffs. I don't want you to be bothered by that. So the
It's
Clippers
dumb to
are.
put Arizona ahead of the Seahawks because they haven't played the 49ers yet.
No, it's because they have a better conference record. The Seahawks
But
conference
that's
record is
not,
something to be concerned with.
I suppose so. I
It's
mean,
bad.
I think actually the Seahawks play is something to be concerned
A
with.
lot more to be concerned with. So the Clippers and the Lakers, I haven't seen the Clippers at all. Lakers are, is there a chance your projections for them weren't very good? Is that right?
We're very bad, yes.
Abysmal. Is there a chance that you were underestimating JJ Redick as a head coach?
100%. He's
Is
doing all
that
the
what
right
you would
things so
say
far.
after a week right now?
I mean, Anthony Davis and LeBron James have both been healthy, and AD is playing at a top five in the NBA level thus far. And, I'd like to see him continue that for a full 82 games, but
AD has been.
yeah.
It's kind of, I feel like he's still capable of it, right? It kind of
That's not,
got lost in the mix that he's good.
it's not shocking, but this wasn't, he wasn't that good last season and has not been that good since the 2020 bubble playoffs. So, but if he keeps it up all year, yeah, I think it's plausible that they could be a top four team in the West.
What about some of the players that were on the list and some of the rookies? Like, how has Reed Sheppard been so far?
Oh, not good. Hasn't played very much. Houston's kind of a weird team right now. They got a lot of guys. They're still figuring it out. I mean, I think they're a team that will probably do better as the season goes on and other teams' players get injured because, and their players also get injured because, you know, their depth is superior to other teams. But Reed Sheppard so far shooting 33% from the field.
Okay. What about Wemby in year two?
Slow start.
Really?
Yeah. The Spurs are 1-2.
What about him
Wemby,
personally, though? I mean, I'm looking at his stats and it's 20 points a game, 12 rebounds, almost three blocks.
I mean, it's not going to be possible for Wemby to not put up amazing statistics. Like, as long as he steps on the court, he's going to put up amazing statistics. But he's shooting 22% from three and taking six of them a game. And
Okay.
55% on two is not what you would expect, I think, from him. So I would say it's been a little bit of a disappointing start for him. I mean, I don't, I think this was Zach Cram wrote about this on The Ringer. The preseason lines implied that he was likely to average between 26 and 27 points per game. So if he averages 20, that's actually falling well short of expectations.
Okay. Who has surprised you so far in just a handful of games? Individuals.
Let me see here. Let me go to my list.
You're surprised by no one.
Oh, Buddy Hield is making like every three, which is very exciting. I mean, Chet Holmgren like seems to have taken a real step forward in
God.
his second year on the court. He's also in the top five in WARP along with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So that's a pretty momentous development, I would say, thus far.
Who's the rest of the top five in WARP?
Jason Tatum, unsurprisingly, I mentioned, and then his teammate Derek White is the Celtics have played, I think, more games than most other teams thus far.
Derek White's also in the top five in WARP. Interesting. So that's the top five. Tatum, Derek White, Paolo.
He's sixth. Actually, maybe
Okay.
this list is, oh, this list is a little outdated now that I'm looking at it. Chet dropped out of the, Chet dropped way out of the top five with his most recent game.
There we
It's
go.
Tatum, SGA, AD, Damian Lillard, Derek White, and then
Oh,
Paolo.
okay. Have there been any rookies who've done basically anything yet so far, or young players?
Rookies, not so much. I would say not. Most of them are just not even playing that much. Donovan Klingon has looked pretty awesome in the minutes he's gotten for Portland, but isn't playing much.
Anything from Zach Edey?
Up and down, I would say thus far. Like Jae Huff is the big breakout star among Memphis Grizzlies centers.
Okay, fair enough. Have there been
He
any really
was
good
not on the
games
players to watch.
yet? That was the thing that I felt like I was noticing was that I thought the Lakers Suns game was pretty good last night, but
What's been the best game of the season?
I feel like there have been a lot of blowouts early on.
I wouldn't necessarily say that, at least among the games that I've watched. But I don't, you know, there's nothing that jumps to mind right away is like, oh, that was an instant classic. I mean, not that I necessarily expect that in the first week of the season. I mean, the Clippers Suns game on opening night that went to overtime, that was pretty good. We had the wall, the debut of the wall. The wall, a breakout star of the season thus far.
People love the wall.
People love the wall.
How are the Jazz negative 17 in point differential?
Oh, they're very bad.
Are they
They
going to
are
stay that bad?
very, I think they desire to be that bad. So yeah, one of the sad outcomes of the season thus far, Taylor Hendricks had a broken leg and a dislocated, I believe, ankle that he suffered on Monday night, so he's out for the season. Yeah, I don't think they're going to be very good.
When was the last time the Jazz were really bad?
They got Dante Exum. They were in the high lottery that year, the Andrew Wiggins lottery year.
Okay, so it's been a while though. Like, honestly, over the last
Oh yeah.
probably like 30 years, the Jazz just haven't been that bad. Interesting.
Or so we can get seven NBA Seattle area products have scored 50 points in an NBA game, which is kind of wild, all things considered. All right, next up in the toast, congrats to Brian Schmetzer, whose multi-year extension with the Sounders was announced last week. It was a drama-free negotiation after Schmetzer's previous extension wasn't signed until January, months after the Sounders had reached the previous season's MLS Cup final. I'm on the record. I don't know if I continue to believe that Schmetz should be manager for life. It does seem that there should be some term limits in place for these sorts of things. But as long as he wants to be manager and is capable of managing at a high level, I see no reason for the Sounders to move on from somebody who is such a Seattle legend and fixture. A welcome to Salmon Bay FC, which we learned will be the name of the new USL Women's League W League team based in Ballard and affiliated with Ballard FC, set to begin play next season. Some nice branding on the Salmon Bay FC logo. I don't know if you've seen that, but
I have. It looks pretty good.
yeah, it's got salmon in there.
Yeah,
All right, and lastly,
I'm
this week,
for it.
a congrats to Bothell's Brent Hall, who was named the driver for the U37 Legacy Racing team
There we
to
go.
compete in next year's H1 Unlimited
This is
circuit.
the stuff you're coming here
We've got some
for.
hydroplane off-season news. Transact, I guess. Legacy Racing has grown out of the ashes of Shoemaker Racing, which last competed in 2014 with the late Billy Shoemaker as co-owner before his death last year. Shoemaker's widow and co-owner Jane Suzuki has teamed up with Crystal Weeding to bring the team back a decade later. Hall will become the first black driver in H1 history when he qualifies.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible news.
Yeah. Very exciting to see that.
You said Bothell. Okay. I thought you said Ballard.
Yes, because I said it right after Ballard FC, so maybe you got those conflated.
I mean, this is huge news. Most recently raced hydroplanes in the Grand Prix with Hop Racing.
He came within one lap of getting qualified in the 2023 circuit when he was essentially operating as a backup driver for the U40 team.
The most important thing is that we keep all hydroplane drivers local to the Seattle area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to the extent that we can diversify them, not geographically,
Yes, no, definitely not geographically in any
but
way.
in all other ways within the Seattle area, we love to see it. So there you go. We'll have a few months before we actually get to see Brent Hall take the water again, as we are in the long unlimited the hydroplane off season is much like the MLS regular season in terms of length.
Brent's wife Elsa now supports two racers as their son Brent Jr., who turned 12 in November, is entering into his third season of junior hydroplane racing and showing some amazing promise behind the wheel as well.
Where's Lucas racing at?
Prodigy.
Where's
My favorite thing about this is that he's old enough to have a 12-year-old son and just now becoming an unlimited hydroplane driver, professional unlimited hydroplane
I mean,
driver.
look at Dave Vilwalk, who one of his previous rides, he was the most recent driver of this U37 team when they were racing 10 years ago. It was Dave Vilwalk. So he's got plenty of prime years left, is what I'm
There
saying.
we go. I love it. I was implying that I would be able to be an unlimited hydroplane
Oh,
driver.
okay. Oh, wow. I had not considered that
I have an
possibility.
age. It's nice to know there are certain things that you haven't
I
aged out of.
was thinking more like pickleball, but yeah, unlimited hydroplane driver. You still got a time
Pickleball.
to work up through the ranks. I think you're gonna have to buy your own team to get a seat, though. I guess actually you're gonna tell me to buy the team and make you the driver.
I would trust myself over you if those are the two options.
I mean, I also would trust you over me. Not get anywhere near the cockpit of the Miss Fabulous Peloton cast.
Keep it low and slow for a while there.
Just,
We need to have Margot drive it.
mean, I do think, yes, he is the actual chosen car
He's our
seat, though.
hydroplane racing prodigy.
He's the one with likes the death-defying sports.
Okay, are we done with toast? That was a great
We are,
toast.
yes.
I out of nowhere, honestly.
I'd love to see it.
I really appreciated it. So I'm a little sad. I feel like we haven't done Halloween proper justice these last couple of years. I don't have anything for it, but we do need. Have we ever done Halloween candy with Nate Duncan?
I don't think we had Nate on for that. We have done Halloween candy rankings, but
You and
not with
I,
Nate.
yes.
Yes. I don't know where Nate is on candy. I'll have to feel him out on that.
Where Nate is on candy in general.
I don't know if he's a big candy guy.
You know what's funny is we've moved this podcast to being more virtual than it's ever been. And we're now in a platform that it's way easier to have guests on than we've ever done before. And of course, in that era, I've had way fewer guests.
It is all true. 100% accurate. As opposed to when we were like both to getting together in front of the Skype screen
Yeah,
so that we could
back when it
talk.
was way more complicated, we had many guests, but now we're just like, honestly, we're just too good at this on our own. So
Oh.
it's hard to bring a third person into this brilliant rapport.
I think the listener may disagree. Also, even though we have these capabilities with Zoom, our favorite method of bringing in guests now is you calling up mom on the phone.
It is a great way to call to.
Did you know, speaking of things we have not discussed yet
What's
on this
that?
podcast specifically, next Tuesday is election day. I just dropped off my ballot. I'm probably late in doing so
I did too
relative to the
today.
listener.
There you
Okay.
go.
Mom's birthday falls on election day this year.
I'm
It's a real
aware.
tough beat. I would not want my birthday anywhere near election day.
I am very aware. Are you taking
So,
her to dinner?
we are, yeah.
Where are you going?
Don't need a.
You're going to El Nido on her birthday?
Yes. So,
Going to be a stressful one.
we'll be an interesting man. I didn't drink a lot of wine in Italy, but may have to get into it on election night. We'll see.
Anyway, so Halloween related. I finally was able to unveil my Leo Messi costume, which more
Okay.
or less just consisted of a Leo Messi jersey.
Not more or less. Like I asked you, like, are you going to get a World Cup trophy or something? And you were like, no, I might get a soccer ball.
I don't, what do I want with all these accessories?
Oh, to
Like,
me, the
people know
accessories
who
are
I
the
am.
best part of the costume. It was like, why am
That's
I?
because if you don't look like the person, then you have to play up those things.
I'm not saying I didn't look like Charlie Kelly or look like Ron Swanson when I dressed as those particular
But
sitcom
you
characters.
don't look like them. Did you grow the mustache?
No, I had a fake mustache for Ron Swanson. But Charlie Day has a beard. I do more or less just these. I don't know that there's like some distinguishing feature of Charlie Day that I'm significantly lacking. But the board that I could point to in the, Charlie Kelly
You are
meme,
recreating a meme. I'm not
I.
recreating one specific Leo Messi moment. It's just Leo Messi.
Fair.
Okay, so anyway, it's basically just Ar Leo Messi Argentina jersey, track pants, Adidas shoes. So I went to the Trunk or Treat on Friday night, neighborhood Trunk or Treat, and when I got there, there were a bunch of kids who were just like, "Oh my God, Messi!" They were excited that I dressed up. And I brought a pen with me. That's the accessory that I brought, was a Sharpie to sign autographs.
Oh, there you go.
And so I signed a pack of like the Halloween Pokemon cards with kids
Wow.
yelling about Messi.
You signed it as Leo Messi?
Yeah, of course.
Wow.
I took a selfie with somebody while I was there. And then there was another guy who came up who was like, he was like, "Oh my God, you do look like Leo Messi." And it got pretty dark. But then we went to the haunted forest in Maple Valley, and that we're like waiting in this long line or whatever. And there's a giant group of like 15 teens and tweens or whatever. And they are screaming Messi the entire time that we're in this line, like every time we wrap around. And so we wrapped around so that we were opposite them. And they were like, "Messi, can we take a picture?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course." So I'm in this photo that these kids took. I'm on probably was on some random Instagram
Oh man,
somewhere.
I would love to
And
find that.
with all these kids, I didn't have my Sharpie, so he was like, kids were like, "Can you sign my head, Messi?" But I took that photo. And then there were these other kids in line behind them after, and they were like, "I do kind of see the resemblance." After. And then I wore the jersey to this to the Seahawks game on Sunday because I knew the game would be abysmal. So it was kind of fun. And then so we come sit down, and then the dude next to me is like, I'm like feeling kind of like an idiot, I guess, for wearing an Argentina jersey because it doesn't necessarily look like a Halloween costume. The guy next to me, the most friendly Bills fan, of course he was a Bills fan, because most of them were.
We'll get to it.
The most friendly Bills fan. Honestly, I loved him. He's my favorite person who sat next to us all season long.
I mean, like, this is the thing about it is there's zero animosity between Bills and Seahawks fans.
I felt I was telling Chris was like, Bills fans were fine with. And I was like, there's nothing that will make you hate a fan base more than being in the building with a million of them.
Correct.
And I still didn't feel that way after. The close enough game to even care. But like, they weren't assholes. Anyway, this guy was so
I would
funny.
Love for the Bills to win the Super Bowl.
To me, a Bills-Lions Super Bowl, it's almost one of those things where you're like, I don't want this to happen because it just doesn't happen for these teams. You know, like, it's almost part of the mystique. Like, the Cubs mean nothing now, right? The Cubs meant something. They won a World Series. They don't mean jack shit anymore. They're just a baseball team, right?
I think the Cubs still mean a lot of things. Day games, Wrigley Field, all that.
Sometimes the pain is the point. And again, when you win something, you realize you don't actually get anything, right? Maybe you buy something. You get to watch a few more baseball games or whatever. You don't get anything. At the end of the day, you wake up and you go to your job, right? Maybe you attend a parade. Well, so I think...
This, of course, does not apply if you work for the team, in which case you do get a championship, right?
Okay. The amount of people you are talking to in this scenario then. But anyway, this very friendly Bills fan, after like 10 minutes, he was just like, hey, I just want to say I love your costume. It's kind of funny to call it a costume. He's like, I saw you walk in and I did a double take about that. And then I was like, after the game, waiting in the line for the bathroom, and this drunk guy, very friendly, came up and hit, like, punched me on the shoulder. And I was just like, he was like, looking like Messi over here. And I'm like, yes, sir, that's the point.
Are you going to go as Messi every year from here on out?
Oh, yeah, it's done. I had a costume.
I mean, that is great. And it would be funny if for some reason Leo Messi ages in a way that you two no longer look the same. Because I don't feel like young Leo Messi people necessarily said you looked like him. It's only subsequent to you growing the beard and him sort of aging into it that I think people think you look alike.
I think that's fair. There are some photos. I got to get a good photo on Halloween. Halloween proper. But
recreate.
There's some photos. Like, I was Googling Messi, blonde Messi, and I was just like, it's kind of crazy, some of these photos.
It is true. Mrs. Fanny C. Genius continues to think that you're cheating on her with Leo Messi's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on Halloween?
No, that's it. That's all I have on the holiday of Halloween. Halloween.
Well, I hope everyone has a happy Halloween. Should we get into the roundup? Let's start with the Seattle Kraken, who, after losing three straight to end their homestand, started a five-game East Coast road trip Tuesday in Montreal with an 8-2 win.
I saw this. Let's freaking go.
Behind four goals in the first 11 minutes. Then I forgot to put this in the toast. I changed it because I was going to. Brandon Montour, the third hat trick in Kraken franchise history and a natural hat trick, which then I forgot to double check what the definition of a natural hat trick is.
That means
is.
He got all three in a row?
No, it does not mean that.
What does that mean then?
Oh, you're right. No, that is correct.
I was going to say, I saw that he scored the three in a row. What would the natural hat trick be otherwise?
In soccer, the hat trick is like score with your left, with your right, and with your head is like the complete hat trick. So I thought it was something like that.
With what? Your shoe? A header?
I had not thought through what it actually was, but that was the thought that popped into my head.
We are so well equipped to talk about hockey.
No. I mean, I'm more familiar, I think, with the the Gordie Howe hat trick.
Stick to unlimited hydroplane racing, buddy.
It's the Gordie Howe hat trick, right? Okay, a goal, an assist, and a fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with that one. I don't know if any Kraken players have accomplished that one. Also had, so the four goals in the first 11 minutes, Montour's hat trick, and four assists from fellow newcomer Chandler Stevenson. Great start to this road trip, which takes them three games in Canada. And then the Northeast, and then the trip wraps up on election night. NHL boldly like, we want Nate Duncan tweeting through, or the NHL's version of Nate Duncan tweeting through the election.
Is the NBA not playing?
The NBA no longer plays on any election nights, but definitely not on presidential election nights. It is always every year the election night is a holiday, but they will be playing in Colorado next Tuesday. Some cracking news that we didn't catch up on last week. Vince Dunn went to long-term IR with a mid-body injury suffered on October 17th. Because it's long-term IR, that means he must be expected to miss at least 10 games in 24 days. So Kraken will be without him a period of time, but did not stop the Kraken offense or defense
Yeah.
on Tuesday. All right, Seattle Sounders have taken a thrilling 1-0 lead in their best of three miniseries against the Houston Dynamo. And they did it the way that you take a lead in game one of all playoff series with a penalty shootout.
Is this generally how it happens?
In MLS or
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of them. The broadcasters were mentioning, I think Houston was involved in a couple of them in their miniseries last year. The Sounders did not play one in the first year of this format. But this was a match that was scoreless, obviously, but turned when Houston midfielder Adalberto Carrasquilla was sent off due to violent conduct after VAR in the 66th minute pushed down Jackson Reagan and then contacted, I forget which Sounders player, in the head. This was, I first, now I guess I had the broadcast on previously, but a pretty wild scuffle that it took a long time for them to figure out, which is why there was 12 minutes of stoppage time, which was then
Oh,
extended
yeah.
by more VAR to determine, I think that was whether there was a handball that did not go in the Sounders' favor. So it was at least 15 minutes of stoppage time. Sounders peppered the Dynamo with 20 shots, but put just three on goal with eight of them being blocked. They did still produce 1.9 XG to 0.6 for Houston, which did not have a shot on goal. Yet the Dynamo managed to force the shootout. Once there, Houston defender Eric Svechenko missed the fourth penalty kick wide left, way wide left, while the Sounders went 5 for 5 with Alex Roldan and his playoff mustache sending them to
There
victory.
we go.
So Sounders now a chance to end the series on Sunday in Houston with a win. The game's going to be at 3:30 on Sunday, so opposite the tail end of the Seahawks game. Sounders will get Obed Vargas back from his red card suspension for game two, while the Dynamo will be without Carrasquilla. All right, Seattle Reign FC, after the international break, I mentioned last week that they were heading into their final game. They will actually close out their season in Orlando this Saturday with nothing at stake. Basketball.
I like that this year, I'm just going to note, this year we were like, we're going to do it sort of like emergency pod style, talk Huskies Seahawks at the beginning of the episode.
Oh.
And then kind of, we talked about this generally, like we were doing that quite a bit. We're just like, fuck that shit.
There was no reason to do it today. The
this week.
emergency, the big news at the top of the podcast was Red Hall. We covered the big story. All right,
How many did
basketball.
you see the list of Seattle? This was Seattle Met's top 50 restaurants in Seattle, right?
I have not looked through the list. I've only
Okay.
seen the restaurants that we follow on Instagram that have posted that they were part of it.
Posted about it. I was going to ask you how many you've been to.
All right, do you want me to count this up on the fly? Is it
That might actually not
one
be
through
great
50?
podcasting, but I
Oh
would do
no.
anything to not talk about those football games. So I've been to
Okay.
very few.
It's definitely a very trendy list, I would say. Okay, here. As I scroll. Okay, Asadero Prime, I have been to.
Me too.
Boat Bar, we went to together. I still need to go to Cafe Campania. I'm very disappointed I've never been there. Canlis. I guess I've never been to Carnitas Michoacán. I'd like to go to there. I have a reservation for Spinace, but have not yet been there.
I've been to Spinace. It's excellent.
Chicken Supply. Communion. Corson Building. Really enjoyed that. I don't know if we talked about it on the pod.
Yeah,
Crawfish
I've never been to
House.
Corson Building before.
Obviously. Dre's Lake Route Eatery. I didn't realize that was still going.
Isn't that cool that they're
Yeah.
listed?
Il Nido. Have I been to Kinlen Thai Night Bites? I feel like I have, but I can't remember specifically. So I'm not going to count it. Little Red, which you still need to go to. Outstanding. When we ever get back to the barbecue search, high up there. Marination, obviously. Mezzanotte.
I've never been to Mezzanotte. It's kind of crazy.
Are we counting Musang? We've had takeout there. I've
I've been to
never eaten a
Musang.
meal there. Let's see. Homer, Saint Bread.
I don't understand how I've not been to
Nbien
Pasta Casalini.
Xi'an. So I've been to
Yeah, those are
16 of
almost,
these, I
those are
believe.
pretty close to mine. You've been to a few more.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing on there that's like, it's not like super obscure necessarily, but it's also like not Loretta's, which, with all due respect, definitely one of Seattle's 50
Oh,
best
yeah.
restaurants.
I had breakfast on Sunday. I was driving to go meet Chris, and he was like, "I'm stopping off in Georgetown before we met up." And oh my God, what is that place called?
The cafe you're talking about?
It's owned by the Loretta's people.
Oh, I see. You're in Georgetown. That's I don't remember what the name of it is though.
But I stopped in there, had a tavern burger with a fried egg on it because it was breakfast. It was phenomenal.
Well,
I
nice.
had a great time. Star Brass Works was what it was. I had an excellent time there. Anytime you could get a tavern burger of any kind. But yeah, the tavern burger with the fried egg was pretty phenomenal.
That's like your version. If you can get 10,000 odds, one odds on anything, you should take it. If you can get a tavern burger at any time, you should get
Yeah, I'd actually already eaten right before then. And literally Chris was like, "I'm stopping off to get a burger and a beer." And I was like, "All right, I'm gonna go." I was gonna go to the light rail. And then I was at the road where you just make a left, go over Boeing Field, and just be there, basically, into Georgetown. And I was like, "Well, fuck it, I'm going to Georgetown and I'll meet there." We took the bus to the game.
Interesting.
To and fro the game. Yeah.
I've
It was a
never done
pretty
that for a
fun little
Seahawks
experience.
game.
Fun little experience in public transportation, especially when it was pouring rain after the game, and the bus comes a lot less frequently than light rail does. So we just went into flat stick though, because you get on the bus literally to go to Georgetown. You get on the bus like right next to flat stick.
Another
So
place I haven't been to in a while, Flatstick.
to flat stick, yeah, we were talking about when we were in there. We were like, "Isn't it crazy that these people we used to tailgate with now have like an empire?" It's
Yeah.
pretty awesome. Anyway.
UW basketball. The women are not playing a public exhibition. They'll begin their season next Monday against crosstown rival Seattle U. It seems like one thing they're moving away from this year. Last year we had the UW women, UW men double headers at home on a regular basis. I think they did that the last two seasons, but at least not to start this year. UW men will open their season next Tuesday against UC Davis, but on this Tuesday night, hosted Western Oregon in an exhibition, winning 105 to 68 in the unofficial beginning of the Danny Sprinkle era. Seven players scoring in double figures for the Huskies in this one. They started four transfers, guards DJ Davis from Butler, Tai Iheanacho from North Dakota, and Makai Mason from Rice, plus forward Great Osabor with holdover Frank Kepnong in the middle. The rest of the rotation was Wilhelm Breidenbach, redshirt freshman Christian King, true freshman Zoom Diallo, and Portland transfer Tyler Harris. That was maybe the biggest surprise here that Harris didn't start, given that the Seattle Times wrote Tuesday about his NBA potential. So a little
Really?
surprising that and we liked him as a
He was a pilot
stretch,
last year?
yeah.
Wow.
And we liked him as a stretch four. But one of the things that Danny Sprinkle said afterwards, I don't have a starting lineup set. Those are just the guys who have probably been probably the best over the last 2, 2.5 weeks, and then close with the starting lineup's going to be fluid. We also saw freshman guard Jace Butler and Oregon State transfer Casey Ebekwe get some minutes in the first half. So those seem to be your primary 12 guys, I would say, going into the start of the season. DJ Davis, like I said, had a game high 16 points, knocked down 4 threes, half of the 8 for the Huskies. They had just 9 turnovers, which I think was probably the most impressive aspect of this performance, especially with as many newcomers and a new head coach. Nice to see Kepnong back out there after the knee injury that ended his season and allowed him another year of eligibility. He had 12 points, 3 blocks, 6 of 7 shooting in just 13 minutes. Christian King, who is the son of Sonics great Rich King and redshirted last
Great.
year.
That's what we're going with, is Sonic's great Rich King.
Sonics player Rich King had 10 points,
He
four
didn't
of
even
seven
make the
shooting.
Slick Watt song, right? The
I don't
theme
know.
song. He's not even in it. So you have to be in the song to be a Sonic's great.
Tyler Harris did score 14 points off the bench, had 7 boards, so he was quite productive when he got in off the bench. And then 14 points from Zoom Diallo, who got to the free throw line 9 times, also had 7 rebounds in his first collegiate game. So that was, I think, very encouraging. Kind of quiet night for Grado Sabor, had 12 points, 8 boards, but like, we know what Grado Sabor can do. We don't need to see him here. Also, Wilhelm Breidenbach, a perfect 4 of 4 from the field,
There we
11
go.
points. Breidenbachers everywhere rejoicing. I think the guy we never talked about, I don't know, maybe we did, but I couldn't find him in the notes, was Tyree Iheanacho, who got
It's
the start.
Tyree.
Yeah, I think I said
Okay.
Ty in the when I listed him in the starters, but it's Tyree. I think we might have missed his commitment. He played 2 years in North Dakota, sandwiched around two at James Madison, averaged 14.5 points, 5.0 rebounds, 3.9 assists per game last year for the Fighting Hawks. Just a 35% career 3-point shooter, but probably the truest point guard on this team. So not terribly surprising that he got the start, had 4 assists, tying for the team high in his 17 minutes tonight.
We're in the fun part of the season where you get to learn who's on the team.
You definitely get reminded of it.
I mean, there's a player that you I never a couple of these players that like Tyree Iheanacho, no idea. I'm not going to say that I really remember DJ Davis or Mekhi Mason.
I at least remember talking about them. So,
How do we feel after game one? Are there any takeaways at all? Nothing, basically.
moderately positive, but you know, the level of play against Western Oregon is obviously not representative. Look, I mean, we've seen years where Huskies have struggled to win some of these exhibition games, so winning by 37 points, I'll take it. The competition does get considerably harder next Tuesday. UC Davis, coached as they have long been by former NBA guard Jim Less, starts number 176 in KenPom after going 20-13 last season, 14-6 in Big West play. This, I think, will be interesting against the Huskies. You know, given the shooting remains probably their biggest question mark. UC Davis played zone on 13% of possessions last season, percentage of sports tracking, rating in the 80th, ranking in the 80th percentile nationally. So that's the test that the Huskies will get next week, and I think we will learn a lot more about them then. All right, nothing more for that, apparently.
I mean, we'll see. I'm actually on to Husky football. I'm looking at the box score, thinking about it, feeling things, being angry.
You'd have lost 31-17 Saturday at number 13 Indiana. But as you said off the top, I'm going to concede to you that I think the results of this weekend showed that clearly the Huskies had a better chance of winning against Indiana than the Seahawks had against the Bills.
I mean, nobody wins, right? I think that's kind of the main takeaway.
I mean, I think there's a reasonable case to be made. Even though the Seahawks outgained Indiana, the Huskies outgained Indiana, in part because of the fact that Indiana had some kneel downs at the end here. Like, I don't think they outplayed them, but I do think that there was a path to victory in this game. as you sort of laid out, with Taven Jackson playing quarterback instead of Curtis Rourke. And that the biggest thing that happened is a 67-yard interception on a double pass.
Not a double pass.
It was intended to be a double pass.
Oh, that was the intention, was it was going to be a
Yeah, you
double
didn't see
pass?
that? Yeah.
No. God damn it. It probably would have worked too.
So
Fuck.
based on EPA, weirdly, this play was omitted from the play-by-play in the database that I have. But the Huskies beforehand had 4.2 expected points on that drive. Now, granted, EPA doesn't know about their struggles in the kicking game, but they were moving the ball pretty well. They were already on the at the 31 of Indiana. They had a pretty good chance of taking an early lead. Instead, they're down 7-0 and trail the entire game. And the Hoosiers, as we talked about and was talked about on the broadcast, have not trailed all season. So it would have been interesting, especially given their difficulty passing the ball at times in the game, to see them, have to play from behind. Instead, they got the luxury of exactly the start that they wanted in front of a raucous and terrific home crowd. There weren't a lot of Bills fans at that one.
It is kind of funny. In the ESPN play-by-play, it just goes 2nd and 9. Will Rogers pass complete to Denzel Boston for 11 yards, and then nothing after
I don't know what happened there. Yeah, that's the
that.
play-by-play is what the database pulls from.
Things got worse after that. It was interesting because I do feel like, I mean, that was a game-changing play, but to me, and ultimately, like when you look at, they lost 31 to 17. There were 7 points right there. There was a long punt return. And I think the defense overall, despite the fact that they gave up more yards on the ground than I would have obviously liked them to have given up, and they weren't able to get the Huskies the ball back in a position at the end of the game to go and win it. The stand that they had at the end of the first half was pretty solid. But those two series, when you look at it just score wise, that's the game right there, right? It's the punt return, it's the pick six.
I mean, the punt
And
return, I'm less willing to wave away because the Huskies are atrocious at
no, I'm
covering
not
punts.
saying we
They have
wipe
been
it
all
away. I'm just
season.
saying that's kind of like for the defense overall against a very good Indiana offense. Again, they were playing against a quarterback who's pretty bad. I thought the broadcast, first off, was awful overall. It's kind of interesting when you're part of the Pac-12 and you're like, things are going to be different in the Big Ten. And ultimately, everything's more or less exactly the same. Once you get to the Big Ten, things don't change that much between these two conferences. In fact, I think one of the constants that we have in all of life, it might be Pete Carroll, it might be Mike McDonald, it might be the Pac-12, it might be the Big Ten, nothing ever fucking changes. So refereeing was about the same. We're just playing different teams throughout the year.
I
But
mean, I do think there's a difference in the Big Ten in terms of fan support and the scale of these games. That definitely has changed. But yes, the actual institution of the Big Ten versus the institution of the Pac-12, the grass is not as green as it looked.
There is some difference in fan support. It was funny because last week I had mentioned, I was like, this is Indiana. This isn't familiar territory for them. And you were like, well, a couple of years ago, they were whatever. And then they were talking about how long it had been since Indiana had been very good. It's just like, this was one of the worst programs in the Big Ten. And honestly, good for
Yes.
Indiana. I'm happy for them to have had this moment. Like, that's fine. Indiana deserves this. The thing that I thought was interesting about the game overall, and about the broadcast, was Indiana came out thinking that they were not going to have a different game plan than they had in previous weeks under Curtis Rourke, right? Like, I think they were under the impression that they were just going to roll with Taven Jackson, it was going to be the same. And UW did a pretty good job with that. Right around the end of the second quarter, there was a drive. I think there was a drive in the second quarter that led to the
It
field
was,
goal.
yeah, it was the one at the end of the first half.
Indiana changed things all of a sudden, and they were like, oh, this offense is not going to work the same. And that was the thing that impressed me the most about Indiana overall, was that in that short period of time, they were like, we are going to short passing. And they had some people open. They're like, we're going to run the ball. We're going to pa just short pass after short pass after short pass. We're not going to put it's Taven Jackson into bad positions anymore. And after they did that, Indiana looked a lot better on offense. UW's defense still gave them opportunities, though. And that was the thing that shocked me the most, was that the offense just didn't do that much in this game. They had the one long drive for the touchdown, which was great. And it was a great bounce back after the kind of couple of touchdowns from Indiana. It felt like it was a game. And then they had the touchdown at the short field after the pick. Other than that, like you look at this and it's
I mean, I think their last drive was good.
I mean, after the game was over. Game was over at that point.
I suppose so.
The it, drives that mattered. It was punt, pick, punt. Couldn't pick up a fourth down. Another pick. Touchdown. Couldn't pick up a fourth down. Touchdown, punt, punt, field goal. It was just the offense didn't move the way that I expected it to. And I think Indiana's defense is probably a little bit underrated.
I agree.
I think Indiana's defense is probably better than people think.
I mean, we
And
just didn't know because Indiana hadn't faced any good offenses before.
there was kind of just some bad luck, too. I mean, you look at this. I'm trying to remember which series this was. It was Will Rogers, third and one from the 30, incomplete pass. I think, oh, yeah, dude. This. It's really frustrating when you have a new coach to like say what you will. Kalen DeBoer wasn't, I mean, Kalen DeBoer had such a great tenure as head coach. Like, we never got to be angry with Kalen DeBoer, really.
I mean, Kalen DeBoer did have a great tenure. He
He
also had
lost
a,
three games all time in two seasons. Like, we couldn't have been that upset.
but he also had a charmed tenure, is I
Exactly.
think
That
part of
was
what
the
you
word that I
said.
was looking for. Charmed. I was going to say blessed. Kalen DeBoer had a very charmed. He never.
Be careful with that. I don't know if you saw the tweet a few weeks back. You can't say have a blessed day to people because that's part of creeping Christian nationalism.
Oh, God. Kalen DeBoer had a very charmed tenure as Husky head coach. Jed Fish has not so far.
He's had the
And
opposite.
I will say there are some moments that happen. We're learning who these coaches are because even if you pay attention to him at Arizona or whatever a little bit, we didn't see them that much. And there are some things that happen where you're just like, why are you doing that thing you're doing right now? And I think the things it's about, I still think that Jed Fish overall is doing, I think this team would look almost exactly the same if Kalen DeBoer was the head coach. I think the record would be maybe a game different if Kalen DeBoer was that coach. Like, I
I think it
don't think it
would,
would be.
I mean, I do think it would be a little better because the single biggest difference that
Is
would
the
have happened if
transfers.
he, was the offensive line.
Yeah.
Because the offensive line is all playing in the SEC now. You know, Nick
Some of
Harris,
them
the
not
two
that
guys
successfully.
at
Yeah.
Mississippi,
Yeah.
in terms of their team or
And
in terms of
Alabama.
them.
Well, I'm just saying, like, none of them have gone to either Ole Miss or to Bama and been like, woo, we're now competing for a national championship.
Sure.
They also are on some disappointing teams.
But I mean, I think if you come back to like what's the biggest issue for the Huskies offensively, it is the offensive line.
Yeah, which was not good in this game.
No, and it continues to get even more banged up, which maybe isn't that surprising necessarily.
It was a pretty huge factor, but there are just some of these moments. So this series, not that it matters, right? It shouldn't matter the situation. But there's 19 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
Third and one at the 30. For some reason, instead of letting the clock tick down, because they could have let it tick down to the end of the quarter
I haven't
and just
reviewed
start
it
at
to
the second
double
quarter.
check that they could have.
No, they definitely could have.
But
They
it
call
certainly
timeout.
seems so.
They call timeout, and it just doesn't make any sense why they called timeout. And I was complaining about it, and Luka was like, they didn't like the look that they got. And I'm like, that's why you let it go to the quarter and you come out with a different look. Will Rogers throws deep on the next play, then they don't pick up the fourth down. I now am gospel. You don't take for granted picking up a fourth and one. You go for it, but if you have two shots at short runs with Jonah Coleman, you take both of those shots at short runs with Jonah Coleman and pick up the first down. This idea of getting like, oh, we can go deep for a play and then come back and get it later, that shit just doesn't. You take every chance you have to pick up that third, that first down there.
I
That
mean,
was a little strange.
agree
And it,
I agree that you shouldn't take for granted that you can come back and get it. But I mean, this is one of those things where, like, because of the fact that it didn't work, people overstate or understate the likelihood of completing a pass in that situation. Like, and
The
there is value
other
because
time,
it's not at the goal line. Like, if you complete a long pass, you get more yards, and that is
I understand
meaningful.
that, but you're still at the 30. Like a first down from the 30 puts you in a position to the expected points on that drive are probably pretty high if
I
you have a first
agree.
down at the 30-yard line. The other play that I
I
was
mean,
really happy with
I
Jeff
think
Fish
maybe the
about.
stronger case that you could make here is as long as you gain some yardage on 3rd and 1, it would have given you the opportunity to sneak on 4th and 1.
4th and 1 at the UW 39 on the drive that ended up in the pick six. Jonah Coleman, 3 yards, first down. Had to break a tackle to do it. But there are many coaches who don't go for that. It just, I
Yes.
think Jed has very good process overall. And I think his play calling in the situations, it's not like he doesn't have good plays. Jed Fish has good plays. He just sometimes calls the wrong plays in the wrong situations. And that's kind of been a consistent thing all year. Maybe it's the offensive line, but that has been the piece that he hasn't quite figured out. Also, the red zone offense, it's just not good. There isn't like they have to figure out red zone offense. They probably are not going to. I mean, there aren't that many weeks left in the season. This is something that they're going to spend a full season of Jed Fish's first year at UW, and they probably won't figure it out at all. There's an over reliance on fades, and I'm just like, how fucking like what are the percentages on these plays? Because I feel like as somebody who has an NFL background, you could look at some of the short yardage plays that they run in the NFL, and there are not a lot of fades that are part of them that ended up being successful. Like you could go look at the Lions playbook, you could go look at the Chiefs playbook, you could see the Rams teams like that, what they're doing. They're scoring touchdowns on different plays, and it's kind of about getting a little creative. It's about making the defense think you're going to do one thing and then doing something else and getting somebody wide open. It's what the Lions do so well,
I don't know.
right? And I don't.
The Bills did score a touchdown on a fade against the Seahawks on
Oh,
Sunday,
just
did
got
they not?
abused on a fade. Requalin.
Yes.
I'm not saying it never happens. I'm just saying they're like they he hasn't found it. He has not found the play calls in those areas or whatever. Like it's a little shocking that it's something that Jed Fish isn't better at. I mean, at the same time, like literally the well, Kalen DeBoer called plays last year, right? It wasn't
Yes.
Crubb, was it?
Yes.
Like Kalen DeBoer has issues also. But there were a couple of moments that things didn't quite go their way. And when you're playing the number 13 team in the country on the road, whose defense is a little bit better than you think, whose offense is pretty good, you can't miss those opportunities. And they did. And that's kind of what it came down to. It hasn't fundamentally changed my perspective of this team. My confidence in Jed Fish overall was very high, and my confidence in Jed Fish now is a little lower.
I think
But
that's appropriate.
there
Wow,
also
Alabama
is
was
like
very good
in
last weekend. Are we sure they're out of the playoff hunt?
oh, I don't say they're definitely not out of the playoff hunt.
Okay.
Many teams are in the playoff hunt. But like also
Ole Miss
Indiana,
also in the playoff
one
hunt.
penalty for 5 yards. Like, come on. Not that I want teams to be penalized more, but that's a little ridiculous. Special teams have been awful. I thought Will Rogers, like I'm trying to think, what was the second pick that he threw?
It was the go ball up the sidelines. And Fish said he thought that Denzel Boston should have done better of trying to play it as a DB. I thought he did a pretty good job. I mean, look, Jed Fish knows a lot more about this than I do.
They were not good. They were not
But also said
Indiana.
that Rodgers needed to put that more on the boundary to make him, impossible
Yes.
to intercept.
Yes. Will Rogers has been a fine quarterback overall.
I
He is
think
a
it's interesting because Will Rogers has been limited in different ways than I expected. Like I expected, given the air raid, oh, everything short, super accurate, which he has been, but deep balls aren't going to be there. And he has shown, I think, more arm strength and touch than we expected. But it's the ability to make plays when things out of structure, when things break down, that I think has been the biggest weakness for Will Rogers. And unfortunately, that's the biggest weakness on a team that, as we just talked about, their biggest weakness is their offensive line.
But Indiana, even like you look at Jonah Coleman's final line and it looks good. This wasn't a great Jonah Coleman game.
I mean, it was
And
a
I assume.
Kyle Manungai game.
And the thing is, Jonah Coleman, when he breaks loose, he has to score because this team just isn't that good from the 30 on. Getting a big chunk play is nice, but they're just not that good after that. I'm curious to see Damon Williams. I think we probably At some point, I mean, every game is just like you do everything. If you win the games against the two LA schools, you make a bowl game. That's important. If you beat either the other two schools, it's a season-defining win. So it's kind of like you do whatever you can do to put yourself in the best position to win every game, because next year doesn't really matter that much. And that's the thing about college football is Damon Williams isn't guaranteed to be here. Like, there's no guarantee that you're actually building anything. So, and I again, my best guess for who the starting quarterback of UW 2025 will be is not on the roster. I still think there is a greater than 50% chance. Or how about this?
I could not possibly disagree with you more. If you would like to wager on this right now, in fact, I would be happy to do so.
Sure.
Okay. We're
We are
making this
officially
an
wagered.
official Peldencast wager. I mean, Jed Fish said this week, I mean, you clearly have paid no attention to anything that Jed Fish said this week, that like Damon Williams is going to take over soon and he's going to be the face of the program and he's going to be for a long time. Now, that doesn't guarantee anything, but you know who else is hearing that?
Damon
Damon
Williams.
Williams Jr.
Yeah.
So I think we're fine there. I do not think he's going to recruit over the top of him via the transfer portal. I mean, I think now the other thing he said is that he's not going to make a change now because he still thinks Bull Rogers gives them a best chance to win games and they still have a lot to play for all the reasons you elucidated. I mean, I think the thing that a game like this does is make me question whether Will Rogers does in fact give them a better chance to win games. I mean, we're looking now, I looked this up because I was a little surprised how high Mitch Moss was. Big Ten QBR leaders, Will Rogers
Miller
has
Moss.
dropped to 12th in the Big Ten. And like the quarterbacks behind him are teams that cannot move the ball at all. So I do think it is plausible that in one given game, that Damon Williams Jr. could have a better chance of winning it now than Will Rogers as quarterback.
I don't know. It would be fascinating to see a little bit more of him when just, I mean, we saw this with Josh Allen. Josh Allen is a freak of nature, obviously, but like, there were so many plays that were called in that game on Sunday where I was like, oh, it's a Josh Allen draw. They spread it out, and I was like, they cooked you, Mike. They cooked you on this one, dude. And there's almost no way to defend it. Again, Josh Allen is not Damon Williams, but like, being able to have, you just get the man advantage when you're running with a quarterback. And if you have somebody who's capable of doing that who could pass, it is a pretty unique thing, especially in college. We haven't seen enough of Damon Williams to really know how good of a passer he is and how good his decision making is.
I mean, we did see probably his single worst decision of the season on the one pass that he threw on Saturday that probably should have been intercepted. So, that may have influenced things as well.
Anyway, I left this game. I mean, it's 9 a.m. This is a reality that UW is going to have to get used to, is playing games like this. They've done it twice this year. Do we have a time for Penn State, by the way?
We don't, but we have two time options, and neither of them are 12 a.m. It's either 12:30 p.m. or
Hopefully not
5 p.m.
12 a.m.
Pacific, or 12 p.m. What did I say? I don't know.
12
Look,
p.m.
I
Eastern
don't.
time.
I work on the 24-hour clock now.
Yeah. I spent so much time in Europe.
Should we talk about USC? All right. Well, they're also 4-4, 2-2 in their first season of Big Ten play. They opened the season number 23, moved up as high as number 11 after beating LSU in the season opener in Las Vegas. But a 27-24 loss at Michigan in their Big Ten debut kicked off a stretch of four losses in five games. They then ended that stretch with a 42-20 blowout of Rutgers last week during. Did you see the LA Sports Weekend?
How good it was for LA Sports? No, I didn't.
So it was Rams. And I forget who else on Thursday got wins. Dodgers in game one Friday, and then USC.
Did the Lakers win on Thursday?
Lakers won on Friday.
Okay.
All three of those sporting events happened, overlapped. Saturday, it was like Galaxy. UCLA had the weekend off. Dodgers won game two.
That's
Even
how you
the
know it was a
LA.
good season.
Yeah.
A good weekend for LA sports was when the Dodgers had the weekend off.
Exactly.
Wow, Curtis Rourke leads all of college in QBR.
That is correct. LA
Wow.
Kings got a win in there. Sunday, LAFC, the Chargers. Like it was truly a wild weekend of LA sports. Obviously, still one win shy of the World Series with the Dodgers. But anyways. USC has been one of the nation's unluckiest teams. They are number 15 in FPI, number 19 in FPI efficiency, looking strictly at performance this season. The next highest team in FPI with four losses is Oklahoma at 29, and their four losses have come by 14 points total. All of them basically decided on the final possession.
Can I just, I want to go back to the conversation about quarterback, and I don't know if this matters to anybody, but just looking at, or if, I don't know if this matters to Jed Fish. How about that? Looking at even the top 20 in QBR, the number one thing that is a unifying factor among all of these quarterbacks basically is having experience. Like, there are not that many young quarterbacks who are up there in QBR. Curtis Rourke, we know, spent many seasons at Ohio. Cam Ward, Cade Klubnik now has been at Clemson for many years. Will Howard has been around. Dylan Gabriel's been around forever. Drew Aller, Jackson Dart, Garrett Nussmeier, like Diego Pavia is a senior. Jordan McLeod has been around forever. Riley Leonard, Carson Beck at this point. Like, experience is one of the most important things about being a successful college football quarterback. And
I mean, it's maybe the most important thing.
if it means that the Huskies are going to win next year and it's a 1 year quarterback and you just take your chances with Damon Williams leaving, it might be a little bit of so be it. I still think the most likely starting quarterback for UW next year is Noah Fifita.
It will be an interesting question if that happens.
Like, obviously, if you had to choose any individual, it's probably still Damon Williams, but I still think that Noah Fifita is going to be the quarterback UW next season. He has everything that you would be looking for right now, aside from the success this season. But that's a good thing for UW. But he has the relationship with Jed Fish. He has previous success. I know it's not Teteromo McMillan's not going to be there. Fingers crossed it'll be Denzel Boston though, and Denzel Boston could have a Rome Odunze type year next year. So, if Noah Fifita enters the transfer portal, Teteromo McMillan goes to the NFL. I really think people can debate this all they want. Relationships with a coach are such a huge factor when quarterbacks transfer. And he had his best season. He had his only season that mattered under Jed Fish.
That's
And
all
Noah
fair.
Fifita at that point would be a junior quarterback with a lot of starts under his belt. And I think he's the type of quarterback who could lead UW to the playoff.
That's fair.
And I don't think Damon Williams is. We'll see. But I do
Next
not think soft
season, or
I don't think sophomore Damon Williams is the type of quarterback who leads UW to the playoff.
probably not. Well, quarterback for USC, fourth-year junior Miller Moss. He replaced Caleb Williams in the Holiday Bowl last year, threw for 372 yards, six TDs in their win over Louisville. Has 16 TDs this season, averaging just 7.3 yards per attempt. But in large part due to their tough strength of schedule, he's fifth in the Big Ten in QBR. So he is right up there with, like, the guys ahead of him are all, like, they could have their teams in the playoff. The Trojans lead the Big Ten in rush EPA per play. Former Rodgers and Dylan Johnson teammate Woody Marks has already run for a career high 755 yards. He's
God, I
third
wanted him so bad.
in the Big Ten
Was
in
it this
EPA.
offseason that there was a chance of him coming here, or is it the previous year?
I don't know.
It's
He's
Jaquavius Fox, right?
that's his full name. Yes, that's his
Yeah.
government. Third in the Big Ten in EPA behind Jordan James and Khalil Mullins. His backup, Quentin Johnson, is 11th among Big Ten running backs in EPA, ran for a 75-yard touchdown in their overtime loss to Penn State. So watch out. It's not exactly a break when Marks is out of there. Marks also leads the team in receptions. Four different players have between 300 and 400 yards receiving. Sophomore Mekhi Lemon has been coming on with three straight games of 70-plus yards, including four catches for 134 yards and a touchdown against Rutgers. The offense is not the reason that USC has not had the blowout losses that they had last year, or I guess the frustrating losses that they had last year. That's been more about the defense, which has been much more sound under former UCLA defensive coordinator. I saw how this is pronounced, and now I have, oh, it's Danton Lynn, the son of former NFL head coach Anthony Lynn, who chose this name to rhyme with Canton. It's Danton rhymes with Canton.
That's
35th
awesome.
in FBI efficiency after ranking 90th a year ago. Pretty equivalent against the running pass, but opponents have completed 68% of their passes against the Trojans, second highest in the Big Ten, yet just 12th in yards per attempt out of 16 teams. No player with more than two sacks, so that's maybe good news for the UW offensive line and for Will Rogers, his chances of having a big game on Saturday.
A fascinating one because a team that's in a similar situation as UW and has lost every road game that they've played and won every home game plus the one neutral site game against LSU, a big win against LSU.
They got their win in a slightly more neutral location than UW's neutral site loss.
And also a much better team. Well, a probably better team. The Maryland loss was one especially where you kind of looked at it and you're just like, how did they lose this game? I was even I watched a replay of it after, and I was just like, late in the game, I was like, how did they end up losing this game?
Yeah, I mean, it
Miller
was
Moss
they were
was
up two scores in the fourth quarter.
Miller Moss was good, but not incredible. Had the pick in the game. I mean, they did give up 429 yards to Maryland in that one. Penalties were a huge factor. Both teams were penalized quite a bit. It really is this UW offense that didn't look particularly amazing against Indiana last week, which has looked better at home. It's going to be that kind of game. It's can similar to even UW-USC last year. Can they put up enough points to beat USC? Because they're going to give up points. I think USC
I
is
mean,
a
it's not
better
going to be as
team.
high scoring as last year. It's not going to be
No, no,
like
no.
if you have one non-scoring possession,
Also,
it
like, there's
potentially
not going to
throws
be
off the
two
entire.
top 10 quarterbacks in this game either. But USC is a better team than UW. Neutral site, they're a better team. Are they favored in this game, by the way?
They are 2.5 point favorites.
They could kind of do it all in a way that the Huskies haven't seen any offenses this year that are able to do that. That are able to run effectively and pass effectively. UW can't make them one-dimensional in any way, basically. It comes down to, are there a few mistakes? Is UW able to move the ball? Are they able to get it to Jonah Coleman in space and really have big plays? And are they able to finish in the red zone? If they don't do those things, that there's no chance of beating USC.
I think this is well within the margin of randomness. And like, it could be a game where they do execute everything in the red zone and have that kind of success where they do, get a couple of takeaways. Like, USC is a better team than Michigan, quite clearly, but I do think there's a chance for the same sort of outcome in this one.
The
Do you think the fans
options,
would rush the field?
I don't think so.
That was a joke. They're not going to
Oh.
storm the field for an unranked USC team.
The options for this game are a close UW victory or a USC blowout.
I'd be surprised if it was a blowout, but I think a comfortable USC victory is on the table for sure.
I would be very surprised if UW won this game comfortably. And
Yeah.
at like until the offense is just better than it was last week against Indiana. Even though overall there were some drives, they have to get those fourth downs, and they have to score in the red zone.
I mean,
They're
which we're
going to be
speaking
in
to is
there.
the things that are like
Undisciplined.
less
Is this
about
team going to be disciplined?
process and more about luck is what you're speaking to here.
Kind of. I mean,
I
I
mean,
don't
they
know if.
are by definition, it's not like they're a smaller sample of plays when you talk about the red zone, when you talk about fourth downs as opposed to all downs, you're limiting the sample of plays, but also increasing the influence of those plays. And one of the things that people tend to commonly get confused about when they're thinking about football or any sport is to think that things that are more important are therefore more predictive. And that's not the case. So I mean, like, they're 2.5 point underdogs. It's not exactly like Michigan, where despite all the negativity about the program, they were still favored in the game. But I do think it's the same thing where, like, as much as everyone is like fatalistic in the wake of that loss, like, they could easily win this game. So.
I agree. I'm just saying, you have 41st in the nation, is that's where the Huskies are in FPI. That feels about right.
I mean, it's maybe a
If
tad low because, again, I think a lot of large influence random plays have gone against them. And FPI is only based on the final score. It's not based on like play to play success.
Wow, I've got some bad news for you.
What?
They have a 0% chance of winning the national championship.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'll have to cancel my flight to wherever the national championship's being played there is here.
To Tempe or New Orleans or
Not something I ever looked up.
Pasadena, I think it might be.
All right, percentage chances of victory.
I'm gonna say 31%.
Wow, after all that, I'm at like 47. Very rare. Me higher percentage chances of victory. Atlanta is the host of this year's national
Atlanta.
championship.
I mean, Indiana might just be a good team.
I mean, Indiana is undoubtedly a good team.
FPI does not like Oregon very much.
Yeah, their offensive efficiency is not nearly as good as you would think it is, given that they're Oregon.
Oh, I think they're horrible, so.
Well, yes, you can okay, set your opinions, specific opinions aside.
It's just like every flaw that they have, I'm going to see that flaw a lot more than I'm gonna like they'll come down and score a touchdown in like three plays, but then the next drive punt and I'll be like, does anybody remember that punt?
Can't sustain drives. Well, it'll be interesting.
There are
What's
a
the f
lot of good teams in the SEC.
That's the kind of unique insight you get only on the Fabulous Paladincast.
No, it's actually kind of incredible to see Alabama as the third best team in the country by FBI.
Forecast for Saturday is 53 degrees, not
Clear,
much
right?
rain in the forecast, so yeah.
Yeah.
Which is good because, as we know, Seattle sports teams famously terrible in the
They actually, it's really.
rain. It's so frustrating.
They're 8th in offense, 21st in defense, 25th in special teams. Like, that's like a fine team.
All right, well, it's
We're at
enough
the part
about
of
it.
the season. We're going to preview that one in a few weeks. We're at the part of the season, though, where it's kind of like all I have to cheer for is against Oregon.
Well, Seattle Seahawks in the rain, a 31-10 loss Sunday to the Bills, their most lopsided home loss since the Rams in 2017.
That
Kind of
was
amazing.
that Rams loss. Oh my God, I forgot about that one.
You forgot
Okay,
about
finish
that?
what you're gonna say.
I will never forget. I mean, kind of surprising given the way the 49ers have handled them at Lumen Field in recent years, but it was I believe it was 31-13 last year on
They've always kind of
Thanksgiving.
gotten like a little something to be excited about for a second
Right.
before the Rams shut the door.
You 49ers.
Or sorry, yeah, before the 49ers shut the door.
I mean,
That that
they got some
game.
things to be excited about in the first half of this game. They just all ended with something bad happening involving Connor Williams, who's had a fine season, but weird game. Weird game on Sunday.
I would like to posit that it doesn't matter, first off.
No.
Those I you know, like the run of game might have changed. I don't know. The
I
Bills
mean,
are just a better team. That's what I fucking told you. I was like, that Bills team is
you were
just
right.
way better than
Yeah.
the Seahawks team. And the way that I feel about the Seahawks team overall is I turned to Chris about halfway through the game, and I was like, this is the worst game we've ever been to. This is it. This is the number one worst. I'd forgot about that Rams game because that Rams game was a little bit more portentous, where it was like, it's over.
Oh,
You
yeah.
know, that game was kind of just like we had a good run. It was fun. It's done now. And it
I
really
mean,
kind of was overall.
one of the things I looked at is like how often the Huskies, I don't know why I have a hard time with these transitions. The Seahawks have been outgained this much. And the answer is a lot. Like they were outgained substantially more. It wasn't as visceral for me because I woke up to this news against the 49ers 2 weeks ago.
That one, there was still a chance at various times throughout the game, but it also took, a kick return touchdown to even be in the place of there's a chance.
And then the yards per play was exacerbated by it was Isaac Garendo who ran for the long touchdown
Yeah,
at the end of
he's
that game.
also awesome. God, it's just like it's one of those things when another team is starting somebody that is clearly worse, and then they get hurt, and you're like, God damn it.
Well, no, I've got some bad news for Isaac Garendo. I don't know if you've heard that this guy Christian McCaffrey is going to be coming back soon.
I don't. I actually. I don't know.
I don't know why other teams' running backs don't matter, only for the Seahawks. Although,
Do running backs matter? Ken Walker did not matter very much.
they're 29th now in EPA per play on rushes.
I just, they're not good. That's the problem. The team overall is not good enough, and the defense isn't good enough. When we're looking at it as far as blame goes, it's just very frustrating to watch this team because it feels like the exact same thing that happened last year. And there have been a couple of moments in Seahawks history in these last handful of years that a decision has had to been made between two people. And I think for the most part, the right decisions have been made overall, but there's one person who has maintained through all of this. And ultimately, the team hasn't been very good for a fairly significant amount of time. And I do think there has to start being some pressure on John Schneider because overall, the roster hasn't gotten better. And part of the reason that the roster hasn't gotten better is because of trades that John Schneider has made. It's not like, look, we could blame Pete Carroll all we want, but it was John Schneider's decision to make the Leonard Williams trade. It was thusly John Schneider's decision to re-up Leonard Williams after that trade. And the amount of trades that have happened during this time period, again, it's John Schneider's responsibility, the roster. It wasn't Pete Carroll necessarily. And the amount of decisions that have happened over these last handful of years outside of the Russell Wilson trade that have led to the roster being in a worse place than it is, than it could be right now because of those, including a trade last week like this. It's one of those things where over time it keeps happening after Pete Carroll, and you're like, maybe this wasn't all Pete Carroll.
Of course.
There's just such a lack of weight put on future draft picks, and that's how you build a roster. He also
I don't even agree
hasn't
with that.
has he
Because
drafted,
sometimes they put weight on future draft picks. It's just
but
like
there's an
there's not,
inconsistency to it.
yeah. And then
It does, you
the
can't
bigger
be
issue to
sometimes you care about it and sometimes you don't. You have to always care about it.
me is not the weight on future draft picks because like. You have plenty of examples in this division of teams that have traded away a lot of draft picks, and it's worked out fine for them because they've gone to the Super Bowl and won, and in one case, won the Super Bowl. We're playing that team this week. Fun fact. Fuck them picks. Like, they did that when they were good enough to go to the Super Bowl. The Seahawks traded for Leonard Williams, gave up a second round pick for Leonard Williams, and missed the playoffs. A fourth round pick is not on that same level, but for the Seahawks to make the Ernest Jones trade and then get as soundly beaten as they did last Sunday, like they don't know how good they themselves are. The
They
self-scouting doesn't exist.
consistently have not known how good they are. Going all the way back to fucking Sheldon Richardson, right? Further, they did maybe when they traded for Jimmy Graham and Percy Harvin, but like the Sheldon Richardson trade was the first very bad trade of this ilk, right?
Yes.
And that is a John Schneider thing, but the roster overall just isn't good enough.
I mean,
Like you can
and
blame offensive line injuries, but teams get injured. The Seahawks are not more injured than other teams are. You have to be prepared for that. Teams get injured. It is a football season. Like there's some luck involved, but this defense just wasn't good enough overall. And then I still have faith in Jed Fish overall. I will tell you, Mike McDonald, I do not have faith in. Mike
oof.
McDonald, I just there has been nothing that has happened on the field that has made me think at this point in the season that this was a good hire. That he has made this team or put this team in a better position than they would have been with Pete Carroll or with a replacement level coach. And Mike McDonald is a defensive guru right now who has a fucking awful defense. So it kind of feels like it did before. But also, one thing Pete Carroll was very good at was controlling the team overall. Pete Carroll was good at almost everything else except for the defense. But if the defense is going to be bad, you still might like somebody who could do all the other bits. And Pete Carroll is basically genius level at running a team overall, right? There's almost no debate about it. Everybody loves Pete Carroll. Players want to play for Pete Carroll. Players generally seem to get the most of their abilities under Pete Carroll. With Mike McDonald, we have not witnessed this at all. A lot of the defensive players on the team seem significantly worse than they did a year ago. Like, Devin Witherspoon is a non-factor this season.
I mean,
it's almost shocking how little we see of Devin Witherspoon right now.
I agree with that. I do think the one thing that you have to remember is development is not linear. Like, Rick Woolen was having this season a year ago, and despite that play against Keon Coleman, I think he has had a very good season this year. But yeah, I mean, so what exactly would you say you do here element? Like, that was the biggest criticism of Pete Carroll. To see it repeated under Mike McDonald is disconcerting.
And he's in his first year. Like, look, maybe things will turn around. I can accept that this may change. I'm willing to change my perspective on Mike McDonald. But in this moment in time, I don't really have faith in the Seahawks offensively or defensively at the moment. But going into that Bills game with their defensive guru head coach, I was like, this team's going to cook us on offense. Like, there's no chance for this defense to be good. And it's either Mike McDonald's fault or it's John Schneider's fault.
I still think it's much more on John Schneider.
Why is John the one who has outlasted all of these people? What has John Schneider done to outlast? I've been on my Russell Wilson high horse too. I love Geno, but God, it would be nice to still have Russell Wilson. Look, obviously taking the draft picks, not paying him, it was all the right decision overall. But man, if you could have Russell Wilson for the salary that he's making now, Geno is, I love Geno too. But
John Schneider didn't outlast Russell Wilson. John Schneider and Pete Carroll outlasted Russell Wilson. The only time it was a John Schneider decision was last year.
And John Schneider outlasted Pete Carroll.
Yeah. And I think that that happened because they had reasonable expectations that they were going to get more out of the same roster, and they haven't. So I do think that's going to create some questions. I think the other thing that I want to say on your point is, like, look, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. You know who was telling us that this roster wasn't that talented?
Pete Carroll?
No.
Who?
All of the national media, or, you know, everyone who is ranking this roster, like the ESPN, we talked about it, like the talent by position, the fact that they had basically... Do they have any top 10 guys whatsoever at any wizard? Devin Witherspoon was maybe ninth. And like DK Metcalf has had a terrific season, but the lack of star talent is pretty glaring.
On the defensive side of the ball specifically, but I also feel like there's players who have the potential to be that star talent. And like, they have gotten some good games from somebody like Boye Mafe, from players like Derek Hall. Like, those players have flashed, but overall, consistently, pass rush wasn't a factor against the Bills. Look at how much money and resources they've been spending on pass rush. It wasn't a factor at all.
I don't know. In fairness, the player that they are spending by far the most on pass rush is on IR. So I don't know that I quite buy that, you know, a bunch
You're
of mid-second round.
Owosu?
Yeah, I don't
it
know
was still
that.
A first-round draft pick. There's a lot of money going to Leonard Williams. Boye Mafe is a factor. Derek Hall. Like, those
you didn't
are
draft
resources.
Byron Murphy the second for pass rush specifically. I don't include him in that. I mean, yeah. The one thing, that, by the way, that particularly perplexes me is, like,
linebacker as well. It's something that was John's decision. Like,
well, it's because they're spending too much at other positions. Like, they're still cleaning up the mistakes that they made.
That's also on him.
I agree. I'm just saying that's the sin. Not
did they,
you know, like,
they didn't have the money to go get somebody like Patrick Queen in this offseason. Like, this defense might be a Patrick Queen away from being a good defense.
I don't know that I believe that it's any one player away from being a good defense, but I mean, they would. I mean, both the linebackers they signed are on one-year deals. I can't imagine that it would have been affordable, or at least without... I mean, it would have been affordable, but with what's the long-term sacrifice? because his cap hit is only 6 million, but then it's 17 million the 2 years after that.
I mean, you got to try to win games sometimes.
No,
Not
you
having
gotta.
DK Metcalf was a factor also. You know, getting the ball downfield was difficult. The
I think it
offensive
was much
line.
more about the offensive line than it was about DK. I mean, one of the interesting things is, and maybe it's a little from column A and a little from column B, I guess that's usually the answer, is like a lot of they came out on third downs with the idea going to be to have a full house backfield and keep two guys in to block and have three player routes strictly with the wide receivers. Fant wasn't running routes on third down, which is tough. And then, I mean, those guys weren't able to win in those matchups, but I also don't think they were one on one because Buffalo wasn't blitzing. And so you had, seven blockers against five pass rushers, which leaves six DBs against three receivers.
Yeah, and there were some moments that Geno made. There was one throw that he threw where I was like, whoa, where he threw into triple coverage. I think that was sometime in the first half. And then they were unlucky. And I can understand with the roster, like Josh Jacobs is not supposed to be playing at this point.
But
And
that's why
Josh
I'm
Jacobs.
perplexed. Why is the story that Trey Brown has to win his job back? I thought Josh Job, like, great play on the interception, but he was repeatedly on the wrong end of a lot of big plays
There
for
was
Buffalo.
a it was a defensive holding or a pass interference, and the receiver caught the ball too, where it was just like Josh Jacobs was in hell in that play. And he had the pick, which was awesome, needed to take it back to the house.
And this
I
is
just
not
don't
about him. Like, it's more like,
He's on the
wait,
practice squad. He's a
yeah.
rookie. Like, I had to look up who Josh Jacobs was in the game. I was just like, had no idea. I quickly pulled up the roster, and then I looked at the roster and he was not on it. Because you had to scroll all the way down to the practice squad. So, I mean, the fact that they even picked off Josh Allen was good, but like not being able to stop the run at all, just so casually being able to pick up that kind of yardage with James Cook and Ray Davis and Josh Allen as well. Like, the Bills are just a significantly better team at this moment. And without DK, the offense it was kind of non-existent. I mean, Geno had a freaking 10.9 QBR. Ken Walker was at a 1.3 yards per carry. It was one of those things where I was like, are they running the ball? And I was like, they certainly have tried a little bit, but the moments that people think that Ryan Grubb gets too pass happy, it's just like, what the fuck do you want? Like, how many third and eights are you looking for here? Because they did have some drives, and like the drive that got them to the goal line before the field goal. And the botched snap was an excellent drive where they just moved the ball really, really consistently. And it kind of felt like, okay, hey, this could be a thing, but that just didn't really happen again for the rest of the game.
They built the whole plane out of the tunnel screen on that drive, and it worked quite well. I mean, I think the interesting question is, are they going to be outclassed against the LA Rams on Sunday?
I really hope not. This is the kind of game that 49ers was too. Bills is one thing. Losing to the Bills at home, we could have seen that on the schedule preseason and been like, that's a loss. You know?
I don't know. I mean, people were pretty down on the Bills preseason, much too down on the Bills.
We know that the Bills are a good team. I don't think they're 21 points better than the Seahawks overall, but like looking at the entire the I mean, it's basically like at the Lions is probably the hardest game on the schedule. The two Niners games, the Bills, maybe the Packers. I'm saying preseason, but like you probably would have said if there was one game that the Seahawks are not going to win this year, it's at Lions is number one, at Niners is number two, hosting the
I
Bills is
think
number
you would have
three.
said that Niners is number one. I don't know if you saw the way that those games went last season.
I don't know.
I mean, especially depending on when you consider the Christian McCaffrey, was that injury preseason?
Okay, fine. Those two games, though, and I think the Bills. So the only thing that I'm willing to take from this is it was just one game. It was against a very good team. Everything went against the Seahawks in this game because ultimately, if they score a touchdown on the previous series, on the series where the snap goes over Geno's head on third down, they score a touchdown there. Josh Jobe gets a pick and it's a touchdown. Probably a close game.
Yeah, especially if they recover the ball when Josh Allen kicks it forward for a first down on the subsequent
Oh,
drive.
he already had the first down. He
Did they? No, he didn't have a first down.
No, he was running. He had already gained the first down when he
No,
kicked it
he had
forward. Yes,
not.
he
No,
did.
that is
That's why
not
they gave them
accurate.
the ball. They were you because you can't on a third down, you can't advance the ball on a fumble unless you've already had it. He already had the first down. That wasn't luck. It
Well, it
was
still
luck that
was
he dropped
luck.
the ball. But it also was luck that he just dropped it without any defenders around. Come on.
No, fumbles touched at Buffalo 10, recovered at Buffalo 23. This is not right. You're wrong on this.
You're wrong about that. He already had the first
I'm
down.
looking at the play-by-play.
Look at the actual play.
Watched the play. I watched it with the first down line, the third down line. You didn't have the third down line as a You were like the Big Ten Network for much of the game.
The referee said he had already been past the line to gain when the ball was fumbled forward.
I don't recall hearing that on the announcement.
Not that I could hear anything over the Bills fans, am I right? Anyway, basically, this was a game that not a lot of things went against the Seahawks because the Seahawks just played bad.
I
And
mean, Buffalo outgained them by 1.4 yards per play. Like, it should have been a clear Buffalo victory.
so some things went against them. It got out of hand. Buffalo's a better team. The thing that really is frustrating is just how comfortably people pick apart Mike McDonald's defense. And I was kind of thinking about it, which was, I was like, why is it so much better to have an offensive coach than a defensive coach? And I think basically, offense is more reliant on scheme. Like if you could do a weight of how much talent matters versus scheme matters more on talent always matters. Scheme matters more on offense than it does on defense. Defense talent matters more. Does that make sense? So
I
your
mean, I think defense
scales in
luck
your
matters
favor.
more.
What?
I think defense luck matters more.
Sure, but I'm talking about in a whole season, spread out over
I'm
an
talking
entire
about a
season.
whole season too.
There is defensive ability. Like, yes,
Of
luck
course, there's
matters, but
defensive ability, but I'm saying that there's less of it. There's more randomness from season to season in defenses than there is in offense. It's a known fact.
sure, yes, that too. But it feels like we've circled all the way around to the exact same place that we were.
No, he
And I
wasn't even
understand.
close to the first down marker. He was at the line of scrimmage when he fumbled. You are wrong about this. The reason they called it a first down is because it was advanced. It was recovered past the line of scrimmage. There's certain rules about when you can't recover forward fumbles in the last 2 minutes because of the fumble risk, but it doesn't apply in a situation like this.
I get that Bobby Slowick and Ben Johnson probably rejected the Seahawks. I understand that. And those were the two.
I don't know about that. The
If they didn't, then John Schneider should be fired immediately,
I
right?
also
Like,
like I mean, it's funny that you're going on this rant. The defensive-minded head coach, who you more than anyone did not want the Seahawks to hire, is the coach who's overseeing the number one offense in the NFL with the like disgraced former offensive coordinator who no one wanted. Like, that's where I think you have to admit that like A, talent and B, just fucking luck matter so much more than anything else.
they have the fucking Heisman Trophy winner. Like, we
Okay, but no
understand
one
the
they we
point
knew
is
that they were
about
going to have the
getting.
Heisman Trophy winner before the season. Did you take the over on the Commanders?
I honestly do not remember, but
I mean,
are
I
you
think
gonna
I
look it up?
did. I think I did because I just needed to balance my numbers.
By the time we got to W, we have no idea. Just saying, like, Jaden Daniels has been so much better than we could have anticipated. And the amount of
But
that
he's
we're giving
been that
Dan Quinn
under
credit
Cliff
for.
Kingsbury and Dan
I
Quinn,
honest,
like.
honestly, I first off always kind of like Cliff Kingsbury. Think he kind of got he got. I would have been actually fine with the idea of Cliff Kingsbury as the head coach of the Seahawks.
I think you are. This is a lot of revisionist history.
Oh, you know I've always been a Cliff guy.
You really like 4 yards per completion?
Disgraced offensive coaches. That's my thing.
Oh, this, but you're talking about disgraced, like off the field offensive coaches, not disgraced because their teams are so bad at offense. Like Cliff Kingsbury is the reverse of your whole
It
the defensive coaches with team aren't good at defense.
has it worked? Like, yes, Mike Tomlin, but like, I mean, even DeMeco Ryans, maybe. I'm gonna give that a maybe, but it still took CJ Stroud in the same way that it still took Jane Daniels for Dan Quinn. Like, Geno Smith is not as good as those quarterbacks. That's it. I would take Bobby Slowick over DeMeco Ryans any day, though. Wouldn't you?
I don't know, because I've never not I I'm less certain of it than you are, substantially, because we haven't seen those coaches and Bobby Slowick in other situations.
The thing that I am certain of.
The other thing I wonder about is, like, and look, this falls on Mike McDonald too, but like the wisdom of going with a first-time offensive coordinator, with a first-time head coach, someone who didn't even have NFL experience. Like, as much as I love Ryan Grubb, like, it's a lot of inexperience to have in one room.
Okay. Jed Fish is the offensive coordinator of the Seahawks. Ryan Grubb is the head coach of the Huskies. Who says
problem
no?
Solved.
How many Belichicks can we get in this situation? The thing that I am certain of is that Mike McDonald's defense right now is not greater than the sum of its parts.
I would agree with that. I mean,
there's
I don't
almost
know.
It would be, almost be impossible to disagree with that.
Well, no, it wouldn't, because they're still 15th in DVOA.
Well, where were they last year in DVOA? I guess they were pretty bad.
They're lower than 15th. 15th is the best in a long time.
DVOA?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
They were really good the first few weeks, and I don't know if you've noticed. Bo Nix is good.
No, their defense is good. Get the fuck out of here. Bo Nix is not good.
Okay, well, just wait until you play my fantasy team.
24th offensively, 5th defensively.
I mean, I'm not saying that they're as good as they are offensively. I'm saying that the idea that, like, oh, of course they shut down the Broncos because the Broncos are a horrendous offense is no longer accurate.
The Seahawks, yeah, 15th offense, 14th defense. I'm not sure about that, DVOA. That Atlantic game is really, it's going a long way.
It was a really good game. Like, you can't dispute it. Which is
sure.
Why I don't think you should overreact to last week. I'm concerned about last week.
I'm not overreacting to last
you
week.
You said
I,
that they
I've
should
been,
they should fire Mike McDonald.
I wouldn't complain. But it's just also the overall everything about it. Nothing feels good about the Seahawks right now. I've
Have
been
you considered
to
that
three
nothing
consecutive
felt good
home
about
games
the Seahawks
where
for a
they've
long
gotten their
period of time?
Ass kicked.
Again,
do you understand that? Like,
you remember
yes,
last year?
It has never felt this bleak.
Which part of Thanksgiving Day felt good to you?
When Steve... Also, which part of Thanksgiving Day felt great to me? When I was winning the Turkey Bowl, dominating.
Okay, well...
I was like
which
the
part
Jane
of Thanksgiving
Daniels of that Turkey
night
Bowl.
felt good to you?
Wow, that Rams defense is not good. It's hard having had three consecutive weeks at home, just being like losing to the Giants and getting way outplayed by the Giants. Well, you're shrugging about that?
No, I mean,
you
I
didn't
agree.
See it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
I
know
did
you
see
were
it.
Gallivanting through Europe at the time.
I was not, sir. I was very much on my couch.
They got their asses kicked by the New York Giants.
I'm aware. I do think, like, the Seattle Times had a story about, you know, the Seahawks and declining home field advantage. It's like, well, look around. No, home field advantage doesn't exist anymore. And the number of Bills fans and the number of Vode fans were there everywhere because there were a bunch of Seahawks fans and a lot of road games, too. Like, that's the reason for it. Along with increased use of video and that sort of thing and refereeing.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we know exactly the reason for it. There were a lot of Bills fans in the house.
I mean, we learned very clearly during the pandemic that fans are the reason for home field advantage or home court advantage. And if lower percentage of your fans are home fans, therefore the home field advantage is going to be less.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think refereeing is a factor in it, but...
But are we talking at this right now about opposing fans? Because, like,
I mean,
I hear you, Gino.
We're not too... I'm trying not to do it to our podcast tonight, so...
Okay. Well, the only point is just win the games. Win the games.
I mean,
Gino
wasn't
have a
complaining
home field
about it, to be clear. Like, if you read the quote in its context, it's not him complaining. So.
Okay, that's fine. But
like,
also,
like, as I said on Discord, they could go 20-0 and win the Super Bowl. There's still going to be a shit ton of Bills fans there at a game because they only come here once every 8 years. And it's very easy to resell tickets now. Like, that genie is not going back in the bottle. There is, other than Steve Ballmer in the wall, like, they've apparently got kicked out. You know, they're kicking out visiting fans.
Are
no
they
one
really?
else is taking that step.
God, I love it. They're kicking out visiting fans like
They're
from that
reseating
section.
them elsewhere in the stadium. Yes.
The Chris was talking about in basically British soccer, right? You can't just go on StubHub and buy a ticket to a Liverpool match. I don't know what the size of most of these stadiums is, but I would assume it's probably smaller than most NFL stadiums
Yes.
throughout the EPL, right? They make it very difficult for opposing fans to go to those matches outside of the designated area or whatever.
Correct.
It's a model. The thing is, the whole fucking thing is American and it's pure capitalism. So, as long as there's money to be made for, idea of keeping out opposing fans is to these owners, it's basically anti-capitalist, right? There are ticket resellers who buy tickets. That would be the idea of having less people in the building, and the point is always to make the most money. So we've seen it kind of over and over and over again.
I mean,
I'm
there's
not sure
enough
if it's.
demand for NFL tickets that I don't think this is the same degree of issue in the NFL, but it's more like
Then why don't they do it? Why don't they do it if that's the
because
case?
that's not the tradition here. They're,
It's
like,
literally just tradition. That is a little strange to me if there's such a long waiting list for Seahawks tickets that you can't find 76,000 people who want to go to a Seahawks game every weekend.
of course you can. It's just you can find the Bills fan who only his team plays here once every 8 years is going to spend a lot more money to go to that one game than a Seahawks fan who could go to nine games this season is going to spend. Like, that's
Then
it.
why not limit that then? As the team, like if it's ultimately what we have to look at, then is it's not the fans who don't care, it's the team who doesn't care.
I mean,
It
I
is that
don't.
there are ways to not have opposing fans in the building, and the team is telling us they don't care about limiting that. Are they not? Or the league?
I don't know what percentage of their tickets are ticket brokers or which percentage of the tickets on resale are actually Seahawks fans who are just, selling a game here or there. That's impossible for me to say without working in their ticket department.
But if they made it more complicated, if you couldn't just
But
go on StubHub and post your
they're
ticket or
not,
on
there's
Ticketmaster
not
or
a
reseller,
scenario where they're going to make it more complicated.
I'm not saying that there is, but just because what you're saying,
Not because of
getting.
capitalism, but because Seahawks fans are also going to be annoyed with it. English fans are willing to do that because there was an era where they had to do it, or everyone was going to beat the shit out of each other all game long. And that never existed in American pro sports. Thank God. So, like, I, as someone who maybe someday wants to attend a Seahawks individual game and doesn't have season tickets like you, I'm not going to, like, have to show my ID repeatedly at games to get in, which I did have to do to get into the Italy soccer match for similar, not the same reason exactly, but similar reasons. Like, there's just shit that people will put up with in soccer because of the tradition that they will not put up with in American football. So please stop trying to fix another sport. You already fixed soccer.
I still think it comes back to greed, though. It ultimately
It's
comes back to
not,
greed.
they're gonna make the money either way. That's preposterous. Like, this is not, back in the 1990s when they were trying to avoid getting blacked out at home. This is when they have an extremely long waiting list. Like, I don't know why they can't get resellers out of that, ticket brokers out of that, but maybe they do
They
try to do
don't
it.
care.
I don't believe that they don't care. And again, they're not, because you make more money on single game tickets than you do on season tickets anyway. So
They don't care
please,
enough.
no, I am rejecting this argument.
Whatever. Anyway, the Rams.
They lost four of their first five with their only win against San Francisco. Then got an unimpressive win over the Raiders after their bye, followed by a 30-20 win on Minnesota in Minnesota on Thursday Night Football with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp both in the lineup for the first time since week one. Kind of surprising given how well they played and how well the Vikings were fourth rate that they only moved up one spot in DVOA from 22nd to 21st. The data is a little muddy on the impact of Kupp and Nacua. Stafford's best yards per attempt this season actually came in week three against the Niners when Tutu Atwell was the team's leading receiver. And it wasn't particularly good in week one with Kupp catching 14 passes for 5.2 yards per target. But the offense did really bog down in the two games before their
What a great
return.
fantasy day it was, though.
Yes, with just 6.1 yards per attempt. And last week's performance really impressive in the context of the Vikings defense. Still, I mean, like, the default is the Rams are a much scarier team when they have both Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp out there.
I mean, it also played out last week against the Vikings. Yards per, they gained 386 yards. Yards per play was better than the Vikings against what is where they DVOA wise defensively. The number one best defense in the NFL. So, I mean, just taking that game, I understand it was at home. Look, the Rams do not have the kind of fan base that the Buffalo Bills have, and the amount of opposing fans will not be the same this coming week. They're a scary team. That's just kind of the reality. And I think we
Scary
also,
offense.
they're a scary offense. When we also just have so many years of them beating the Seahawks defense fairly comfortably that if things had been different in some of the previous weeks under Mike McDonald, maybe we would say this is a new season, turn the page, whatever, new regime. Right now, it feels like things are going to be exactly the same. And it feels like teams like the Niners picked apart the Seahawks defense pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I mean the interesting thing is like the Ravens completely shut down the Niners last year. It was the Rams who actually probably had one of the best games against the Ravens last year.
Not one of they had the best game, right?
I don't
But
know if
let
it
me
was
just tell
the
you,
best.
the Ravens state defense ain't walking through that door. The Ravens defense from last year.
Well, the
At this
Ravens defense isn't walking through last year that door in Baltimore either, which I think goes back to my point.
I
Former
agree
Seahawks.
with your point. Also there, wow, number 18. Holy shit. Wow, I can't believe how much worse that Ravens defense is. I
I mean,
agree with
that's
you though.
probably the
That's
biggest.
why you
That,
hire a schematic coach, an
yeah, but
offensive
that's not
schematic
the
coach.
argument you made. The former Seahawks tight end Kobe Parkinson has caught a lot of balls, 23, ranking second to Atwell on the team, but for just 5.9 yards per target. The small sample of Nacua and then Atwell, by far their best in terms of yards per target. After years of Sean McVay alternating running backs, Kyren Williams has gotten 82% of the carries by running backs this year. He's averaging just 3.8 yards per attempt, and they're pretty average in EPA per play on the ground. Defense has slipped from 22nd in DVOA last year after Aaron Donald's retirement to 28th this year without him. Nobody has more than three sacks, although they're actually up in sack rate compared to last season. First round pick Jerrion Verse, taken just after Byron Murphy the second, had his best game at Minnesota with a sack and a half after going six games without one, and the team's three sacks in that one tied a season high, although one of those was actually a personal foul for face mask.
Oh, God, that was such a horrible non-call.
Rams, one of five teams in the NFL allowing a positive EPA per play on rushes, so definitely the movable object against the stoppable force this week when the Seahawks try to run the ball.
I still, they're not that, it was a bad week. They're not that bad of a running team
They're
overall.
29th in EPA per play.
But it's a good 29th.
Who has a better chance of winning this week? Against LA teams, both. The Seahawks or the Huskies.
I think the Seahawks have a better chance.
I probably will take them, but it's very close to me.
Can I say neither again?
Do you think there's a lot of Rams USC fans making the trip up?
I know of a Seahawk or a Seattle fan from LA who's flying up for both games, not a Rams fan. This would require both USC and the Rams to have fans that wanted to travel to see them. But also, let me just
Especially wanted
say,
to travel to Seattle in early
if you're
November.
living in Los Angeles, California, the idea of flying to Seattle in November, probably
It's
not that great.
very different than when I flew to LA to see the Huskies play USC about this time a year ago.
The Rams have not won on the road yet. And some of these performances, like say what you will about Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, they gave up almost 500 yards to the Arizona Cardinals. And it was on the ground, it was through the air. Have they figured things out? Again, I think I told you this last week. I'm not a Vikings guy. I'm not going to believe in the Vikings at all. So, until I've been proven otherwise, and I was a little bit proven otherwise last week. So, that win at home, it just doesn't feel like as impressive of a victory as it might look on paper. The Seahawks can move the ball in this game and should. Like last week doesn't change my overall perspective about this offense. I think statistically, they are better than they are playing statistically right now. Like this offense is not that bad. And Aaron Donald is not on the other side of the field, who obviously tormented the Seahawks for years. They should be able to score points in this game. It honestly is weirdly similar. Both these games are weirdly similar,
Yes.
right? So They should. I actually have. How about this? I think the Seahawks are more likely because I have more faith that the Seahawks team can actually follow through and score the points than I do in the Huskies. And I have more faith in the offense overall, Ryan Grubb, Geno Smith. And DK is looking like he's going to be back.
Yeah, I think he should be.
Okay. If DK is back, I actually feel significantly better about the Seahawks because it really is just about finishing those series, scoring points. The Rams are going to score in this game, but I think the Seahawks can score. I think there's a less than 50% chance of victory, but the Seahawks can score enough points to beat the Rams.
I agree with all of that. Actually, I think I might go Huskies by a slight margin just because.
That's more likely. After agreeing with all that, you somehow go with the Huskies.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very close, though. I'm at like 45%, somewhere in that range on both of these games. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think we'll learn a lot about both of these teams in this game.
I'm going 45% in this one.
Okay.
But that's the thing. I would love to be proven otherwise about Mike Macdonald. I would love to see something from Mike Macdonald because right now this home season has not been very fun.
Wow, what you just told me is the pessimist is either right or pleasantly surprised. That feels like as good a note as any to end on. Make sure you vote.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.